E is the letter of the day, and 42 is the number that we're talking about. You want to know what those mean? Stay tuned next. Breaking Into is coming.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives. Breaking Into.
I love it. Real drums. Like, real music.
It's amazing.
And the strings. Oh. I mean, it's just, this song is so
good. And then her voice
good comes
and it's so just beautiful.
I know. Welcome to Breaking Into. We're talking about Solange, because we love her. And her album, See at the Table, was really good. Last year? It was like
beginning of 2017.
Yeah, it was like that. So we're going, this year's going by fast.
I still play it like it's new.
Me too. I do too. We are back, and I have a great guest for you today. Now, I mentioned a letter and a number. We're going to talk about that in a second, what that means. I went a little Sesame Street on you today with E and 42. My guest today is affecting change in the world, which is what I love, having these kind of guests on my show. They're doing things and giving back to their community. Makes me happy. I'm so glad. She's the executive director of the 42 Initiative, also known as Club 42. We're going to talk about what that is, what that means, what she does there. She's also an on-camera sports person, too, as an analyst. So she knows what it's like to be on camera like I do. And she's also a former NCAA Division student athlete. You played softball, correct?
I did.
Wrong girl.
Fast pitch softball.
Woo! We're going to talk about that, too, because I almost said something. We're going to talk about that, too. They call her E, but her name is Coach Erin Wesley Jones. Or Jones Wesley.
Jones Wesley.
I like three names. I have three names too, James Lott Jr.
I love it.
You are interesting because I was reading up about you and reading about just going back into your beginnings of just being the athlete.
Right.
You hold you hold the record for a career pitching record. So what does that mean exactly?
So for all 4 years that I played at Long Beach State, I have the record for wins, appearances, and strikeouts.
Wow.
So my favorite of that, by the way, is wins. Because I feel like with strikeouts and appearances, yeah, that's me. I, you know, was on the mound doing my thing. But with wins, that means that it was, like, really a team effort.
Yeah.
And I had such great teammates my 4 years of college. Like, honestly, all of those girls were... Aww. It was really fun. It was fun times, and everyone was really good.
Shout out to the girls.
Yeah.
Shout out to the girls at Long Beach State.
Made my job easy and had some fun time.
So with a team, it really, I mean, because I always say playing sports is a great way to learn a lot about yourself in life, period. So your team, you guys really worked collectively together, so when you played your games, you played?
Definitely. So on a softball team, you have about 18 girls, nine are on the field at a time. And what makes it kind of different than baseball is typically when you have a starting pitcher, you're sticking with them throughout every single game. So there were times we play five games in a weekend, three games sometimes in a day in travel ball. And we're spending all of this time playing together. And you go through a lot of adversity with people. And to be able to kind of be the centerpiece as a pitcher, you're setting the tone. So if things aren't going your way, you can't really act like things aren't going your way, because everyone else will pick up on that energy. So I think that was a really kind of great life lesson that has transferred outside of sports at this point, of just like being able to really control my own energy, but then also be aware of what other energy is in the world. So as a pitcher, you're staring down a batter, right? And they literally want you to fail. You're facing someone who wants you to fail one-on-one. And you can feel when they're going to swing no matter what. You can feel when they are hoping that you aren't going to do it. And sometimes what I think is the biggest lesson I've learned is you can do something perfectly as a pitcher. I would throw a pitch sometimes when I felt was right down the middle. But, you know, even objectively, probably still a strike. And an umpire can just say, nope.
Right.
That's not where I want it. And that's a life lesson. Sometimes you can feel like you're doing something so well, and sometimes it's not on you to decide. It's on someone else to decide. And how do you deal with that? And then how do you say, okay, I have 60 seconds to get over it. 60 seconds, and I have to throw the next pitch.
Yeah.
You have to go to the next moment. So really living like in that moment-to-moment scenario, dealing with adversity, and then really trying to uplift others around you, even when you're struggling. It was. I think that was the most powerful lesson I learned from softball.
So you had to be really present.
Super present.
Which is a good life lesson, period, also.
Totally.
In relationships, in school, in life, and driving, or whatever, you have to be really present.
And acknowledging what's going on in this situation. Yeah. I just see this person swing in this certain way. Do I want to throw the pitch that's getting called, or do I want to call an audible and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm seeing something that maybe no one else can see? And having a lot of confidence. You have to have a ton of confidence.
I'm sure.
But it was such learning lessons all the way. I think it has completely shaped the way I am, and I say that I see the world as a pitcher still to this day.
Well, it's funny. I played baseball one season when I was 9 years old. And that's only, I've only played it. I don't follow baseball or softball, but I played it once, and I did see the team effort. And that you can't be a star because everybody has their part. They have to play in it.
And it's extremely humbling.
Yes.
You could, you know, baseball and softball, these are sports where you're failing 70% of the time and you're successful. That's success.
Right, right.
Imagine if your doctor failed 70% of the time.
We'd be dead.
Yeah, you're not going to the doctor. No, are, you know, you watch MLB, these guys are batting 300, 30% they're right.
Yeah.
And they're making millions of dollars, you know, and they're heroes. They're sports heroes.
Yeah.
And I think that being able to really deal with failure and not let that just control you, I think that is why baseball is such a great sport. And I, you know, that's kind of, to segue, I'm kind of getting ahead of us, but that's why I think it's so great that we're kind of implementing baseball in these urban areas. And we're seeing lots of nonprofits do this.
Yeah.
We have worked with a lot of nonprofits in the past who are also have this similar mission to, you know, help revive baseball in the inner city. But I think that it's something to have resiliency. It's a really important trait for youth to have this day.
No, I'm glad you said it. No, it's fine. We're going to talk Club 42 and its intricacies, you know, a little bit. But you're right. I think sports, art, music, writing, urban areas need all of that. And also, I interviewed on my show here Ron Finley, who's the gardening gangster, they call him. He's in South Central, and he's planting gardens, teaching kids how to garden.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, what you guys are all doing is stuff that we should be doing in our own communities.
Definitely.
Because it teaches us life lessons.
And I think you don't always realize how something so small, it seems like, oh, who cares? Gardening.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
But there's all of these things in everything we do that teaches lessons along the way. And then also just collaborating with others who are also like-minded. Mm-hmm. You can find so many different career paths that maybe you didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
For all you know, someone could now own a landscaping company because they learned about gardening one time.
Right. Right. That's a question I've always wanted to ask, because I've never asked this before anybody who's been a pitcher. What is the relationship between you and the catcher?
You know what? It's the most interesting relationship.
I'm sure.
Because they're the only position on the diamond where they can see everyone.
Okay.
They see everyone else on the field.
Okay.
And so they kind of are like your eyes and ears. Your back as a pitcher is to everyone else.
Yes.
So sometimes you have to really trust in your catcher that what they see is different than what you feel. Because as a pitcher, it's very intuitive. But as a catcher, they have a little intuition as well. But
they're seeing
it. Everything.
Right.
So to really trust someone, you have to really trust your catchers. And, you know, usually you have, like, they call it a battery, or like a tandem. Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate that I was very close with my catchers in college.
Okay.
And even growing up with high school and club softball, you have to trust your catchers.
Yeah.
And also, the catcher's the only person that's going to say, you don't have your stuff. And you're not going to be offended. Because they know when you don't have your stuff.
Yeah, well, our engineer, producer of the show, Marissa, was a catcher, she said.
Ah.
That's really funny. Oh, that's so interesting. And I know we don't know what we do, but Marissa, I just want to ask you a question. So, I mean, what she's saying, does that sound about right for you as a catcher?
Absolutely, because one of the first things my coach told me was that I had to do everything that the pitcher couldn't do or couldn't see.
Yeah.
And because, just like she says, that her back is turned to everybody, so I had to look at the 3 points as first, second, and third base.
Wow.
I had to always catch that because the pitcher couldn't.
Wow.
And they're calling the pitches. They're calling the game.
Yeah.
So the catcher's saying, you're throwing this right now. And so if you guys aren't in sync, there were times where the catcher would call something. I could feel the batter doing whatever little twitch they had.
Yeah.
And then we could make eye contact and say, we're changing this mid-pitch.
Yes.
And they'd be like, you, I didn't call that. I saw something. They're like, it worked out.
That's so funny. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to ask. I've never asked that before. It completely makes sense to me. Because you're facing this way, feeling the energy in front of you, but they literally just can see everything that's going on.
It's crazy. And you know what? I still have yet to find something in life that feels the same as striking someone out. I haven't found
no feeling.
There's no feeling to describe it, and I, I haven't yet. Maybe I will. Someone told me that when I start getting into making, doing major deals, deal flow is close to doing strikeouts.
Yes.
So that's yet to be determined, but yeah. I haven't found it. Striking someone out feels awesome. It's like it. Mini victories.
No, I'm,
right?
I'm sorry. Hey, take our victories where we can get them. I'm all about that. I'm totally about that. Okay, so where did softball come into your life? How old were you when it came into your life and the whole sports thing?
Well, I believe the story is that I was at a baseball field, I think, 6 weeks after I was born. My dad was a baseball player. Okay. He actually played at Long Beach State as well. My parents met there.
Wow.
So I didn't pick up softball until I was about seven. Okay. And by the time I was eight, I realized that, hey, pitching's really cool. And there were all of... Softball was on ESPN at that time as well.
Yeah, I can remember that.
Yeah, and there was a pitcher from LSU, this girl named Brittany Sneed. I still remember. And had a very... Yeah, hey, girl. And she had a long, straight ponytail, and she wore, like, really cool mascara. And I was like, I need to be a pitcher. That's it. And then, of course, you have, like, Jenny Finch, who is just, like, amazing, yeah. And Lisa Fernandez, and all these wonderful pitchers. Yeah. But really, it was this pitcher from LSU who just... Wow. I loved her vibe. And so I wanted to become a pitcher because of that. And I was awful. So bad. I would walk batters. I hit seven batters in one game one time. I remember it got to the point where I kept practicing. My parents never told me I was awful. They were just like, oh, you want to pitch? Oh, she wants to practice. Okay. They just let me do my thing.
Okay.
My teammates, I'd go in the game, they'd roll their eyes. They're like, oh, now we're going to lose because Aaron's pitching. But you know what? I took it very seriously. I left the rec ball league that I was playing in. I started becoming more competitive at it because although pitching maybe was not initially my forte, I could, you know, yeah. I was athletic. I could do everything else on the field. So I started playing travel ball. And when I came back for high school and I was with the girls from my area, they literally said, you still pitch? And I'm like, yeah, I still pitch. Yeah. At that time, I was good. So I'm like, y'all don't know. Of course I still pitch. So I, you know, by the time I got to be in about 13, 14, I really started hitting my stride as a pitcher. And I had really great coaches that kind of helped along the way. And I actually was a part of a travel ball team that had, I think we had like 8 to 10 black girls on the team.
Wow.
And that is really rare in softball.
Wow.
And there were times where we could do a whole black infield at once.
Wow.
And our head coach was a black woman.
Wow.
And it was really, really special.
I'm
still friends with those girls to this day. And I think that we all kind of, at the time as kids, you don't realize how special of an opportunity that was. But we all had father figures that were present, that were showing up, both of our parents at these games.
Yeah.
And a lot of those friends were also D1 softball players, even athletes, and I would play them in college. And some of them have records at their schools as well.
Wow.
So I think that it kind of just showed that, one, it made it less isolating in a sport where it's, you know, predominantly white or at least like Latino as well. There's not a lot of black girls and there's not a lot of black pitchers.
Wow.
And so to have teammates that kind of looked like me, I think really shaped the confidence that we all had and what our abilities were.
Well, I want to say, I mean, you bring up, it's very timely you should say that. We're on Black Hollywood Lives, we can get a little blacker on here. It's timely because I just talked with my brother about Black Panther and how, what is changing the conversation for black people. Because you're saying, I keep forgetting, there are black folks coming to this who don't watch Marvel films now. They're coming to see this. It's more of a black thing. And I said, the only way I can relate it to you is going to the Caribbean and going to certain islands where the government's black. Everyone's working there is black. Like it, like you said, it feels like it's just something different where you just feel you're not the minority at all. You're part of the majority for a change.
Absolutely. And I think that there's kind of this like consciousness that as kids, like I grew up in a predominantly white suburb.
Okay.
So I was used to being the only black kid in my class. And that was what I grew up in. So I didn't even really have a lot of like black friends until I joined the softball team, which is so ironic because it's softball.
Right.
It's not like it was like a basketball team.
I was gonna say, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was a softball team. So I think that really shaped my ability to see when I was the only one. But then also I didn't feel like there was the weight that sometimes other kids may have because I knew that I could go and see my friends and they would kind of, we'd have cultural understanding of one another. But I think being able to kind of be able to balance both cultures. I mean, I have white grandparents. Okay. My dad was a part of a program kind of similar to my nonprofit,
okay,
where they brought kids from the inner city and they went up to the valley. And so to this day, I still have my Nana and my grandpa.
That was me too. Busing. Back then, busing. Yes. Desegregation.
Yep. So yes. I still have my Nana and my grandpa. So for me to have kind of both angles, mm-hmm, and then to see something like Black Panther, where it shows just nothing but one race, right, just right, leading and being, it was such a powerful movie to see.
Yeah.
So special. It just was so special. And I think that the times are really changing in a way where, like, young Black kids can really just kind of see more representation in media. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm not even that old, but I know that times have already changed. Like, for nieces and nephews and little cousins, I'm like, they're growing up in a different time. That seems so, like, your hair's not different. You don't have, right, to feel like isolated, like, oh, I wish that this was true. Yeah. You know, there, I remember, actually, I thought about this morning, and I don't know, this is probably not appropriate to share, but I'm going to share. There were times when I played softball, and I remember thinking, because it would be cold, so I'd have my Under Armour sleeves on and my batting helmet, which there's a cage to protect your face, and batting gloves. And I'd say, I wonder if the umpire can tell that I'm Black right now in my head.
Interesting.
I would think that. And, you know, not when I was on the team that had all of my Black friends, but on the teams when I was the only one. I wonder if they can tell that I'm still the only one right now.
Right.
And I think that that is where representation becomes so important, because who cares if you're the only one? You're just standing up and being in your truth.
Wow, that's so interesting.
You know, and I think that that, to have that, even those, like, that consciousness of being like, I know that I'm different, but I don't think I'm being treated differently, but I would like to just know what it would be like if maybe there was no way to tell the difference. And I think when you see a world like Black Panther, that doesn't even exist.
Right.
Right? And right, that's what makes it special. It's like, wow, it gives everyone the ability to kind of imagine a world where there was no, what did they call it, colonizers or
right,
nothing.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Like, and I think that that is really interesting.
I'm sorry, I want to ask Marissa. Marissa, ask you a question, please. Because you are Asian. Mm-hmm. Did you have a similar experience just playing softball?
Absolutely. I mean, I was the token Asian in my school, in grade school, high school, still also. Well, not so much in college, because fortunately in college, you know, you have a different type of minorities from everywhere. But definitely, and also on my softball team, I was the token Asian. But fortunately, the area I grew up in, they still treated me like I was Caucasian.
Interesting.
You know, there was still some equality there.
That's interesting. And so when you were playing catcher, I mean, because you're in all that getup, could anybody tell you were Asian or no? You
think? No, I mean, it wasn't really addressed because I was catcher because I was good at it.
Okay.
And they put me in that position because I had earned it.
Yeah. That's great. That's good. That's because you brought that part. I was like, this is really interesting because you're playing in a field that's mostly white folks.
Right.
But you're really good. You're a person of color, and she's a person of color. Like, it's just so fascinating to me.
I've looked up studies before because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't making things up. And I actually, by the time I got to college, I did a lot of research, and I found some study that showed that for pitchers, there actually is a difference between the called strike, swinging strike ratio for Black pitchers.
Oh.
And how many called strikes end up happening. And it's kind of tough to see if something, called strikes are objective.
Right.
So you don't really know. But when it's so much lower, it begs the question, why?
Yeah.
And so I wanted a little bit of just justification of, like, feeling that way sometimes.
Yeah.
And but that's what I was talking about, of just, like, having that resiliency of sometimes, you know, your best comes up to someone's own opinion. And what do you, how do you handle that, you know? It was really interesting. But, you know, for me, I always growing up of being like, you're the whitest Black girl I know.
Yes.
So that was always the statement for me.
I just released a spoken word piece called You Don't Talk Black. That was my whole growing up. You talk vanilla. You're like an Oreo. I mean, I got called all the names. And I was like, I'm Black. Look at me. Look at my nose. But no, I always got all the time. And I wasn't one of the, I grew up in a black neighborhood, but it was still one of those things where I came from a multicultural family. It's like, you know, I have white folks and Latino and Black. And so it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm who I am. So I don't like, so I don't always like to be the only Black this or one of the few Black that. So you must know how it feels too then.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's what's so great about what's happening culturally in this country is, like, everyone's kind of shedding that and saying, like, we don't care. I heard Ava DuVernay say an amazing quote the other day on Twitter in an interview, and she was saying, like, you know, a lot of people don't want to say I'm a woman in film or I'm a black woman in film, but I want to be those things. I want someone mm-hmm. to say that about me because that's the gaze I view the world. And I said, how special is that? That is the gaze that you view the world. And why are we wanting to shed all of our labels so that we can just be when we can just be? You don't have to add anything to be yourself. You yourself are special. So just be that.
Let me give you something. So when I was younger, I was told by some people, I don't think of you as black. And I thought it was a compliment at first.
Same.
When I got older, I realized it wasn't. And I said, no, think of me as black because it's not bad. Black isn't bad. So it's okay to see me as black. If you're not seeing me as black, it's because you think it's something bad.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's like, just who I am. And that's okay.
Right. It's okay. It's fine. Leading to this, so at Long Beach State, did you get a full ride scholarship playing softball?
I did get a full ride scholarship.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a lot of work, you know, but it takes a village. It takes pitching coaches and parents that are driving you to lots of travel ball games.
But did your dad do any, because he was a baseball player. I know softball's different, different style, but like, did he do any kind of coaching with you mentoring?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. He drove me. Well, first of all, my mom and dad did not miss one college game that I played in. They went to every single one. We go to Hawaii, they were there. Arizona, they were there.
That's great.
They are really supportive, mom and dad.
Okay.
And my dad, growing up, you know, he was catching every bullpen, and we would have our tiffs because we played different positions. He was a shortstop. I was a pitcher.
Okay.
And so, you know, when you become a teenager, it's, you don't know. Dad, I'm the pitcher, you know? So I think that definitely made an interesting dynamic as I got older. But yeah, he definitely was my number one coach and taught me so much about the game. Yeah. And that was really, really special. Yeah, I think that the reason why I'm able to speak about the game so well now, like as an analyst, is because I would get in the car after I played and we would talk about what we just saw. It's, well, that person probably could have did XYZ. They did that really well. What do you think happened there? And we would just have a really nice sports banner. And my family would do that on every sport. We'd do that for basketball. Yeah, football. As we're a sports family. But I think that really helped shape the way I view the game. Okay. And that was really special. Also, my pitching coach at the time, this guy, Don Sarno, who my dad and I, we would go drive to all the way to La Brea, off Brea.
Yes.
And we were driving in Orange County, and I lived in the Inland Empire. So this is like a 45-minute drive.
Okay, Southern California.
Yeah. And driving after practice, I would leave softball practice and go to a direct pitching lesson, one-on-one. And my dad caught me and would leave work early and make sure that he was there so that I had someone who knew the game enough to tell me when what I was doing needed to be corrected and when things were really good.
Yeah. Go from the IE to OC. I will give your parents credit.
Yeah, they were
That is dedication.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing though about my dad being aware of the game is that sometimes I would have a great pitching game, right? In college, when I was in high school, whatever, and I'd get in the car and he'd say, "They love you when you're doing well," and I would have a game when I didn't do well. And you know, most parents, it's really hard to watch your kid not play well to their ability. And my parents would never yell and scream. I'd get in the car and they'd say, "Well, so I guess we're practicing this week."
I like that approach, yes.
Yeah, so we're just going to throw some bullpens, no big deal. Yeah. And also, maybe it didn't look that great, but you were throwing really hard. Or whatever the positive was.
Finding the positive part.
Yeah,
of it. Yes,
and so I never felt like berated for not having my best. And I think that allowed me to not be afraid to fail. Because when we're afraid to fail, then sometimes it limits us our success.
Yeah.
And I never felt there was a limit to my success.
Yeah.
Because, like, whatever, if I mess up, who cares? There's something else to happen.
Right. Well, you mentioned it was a perfect segue because you do auto hosting for Big West Conference production, ESPN3.
Yes.
So how'd you get that gig? First of all, how'd that begin?
Well, as a college athlete at Long Beach, we had quite a few games that were broadcasted, and sometimes post-game interviews, I would pitch a great game. I'd, you know, speak to the commentators at the time. And those in the conference realized that I kind of, I guess, had somewhat of a knack to being able to answer concisely. Mm-hmm. And right after I graduated, I interned and shadowed and followed some of the announcers that worked for the productions.
Okay.
It kind of got to the point where, this is a great story, I didn't actually know that I was going to do color commentary.
Okay.
And I get a call at 8:30 a.m., a random Saturday. I'd been out of college almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. Aaron, our analyst is sick. are it. You around? And I had a hair appointment. And I wasn't going to tell them that.
Black girls and hair appointments.
I know. I wasn't going to tell them.
Right.
I wasn't going to tell them I had a hair appointment, but I was supposed to get my hair redone.
Yes.
And I said, okay, well, I can be in Long Beach in an hour. And the call time was 9 o'clock. I got there, I think, maybe like 9:15. I rushed down. And I announced the game. And I had never done that before, but someone was sick. And I just took the opportunity. I just said yes. And so then the following year, I got to do commentary for every game that they had broadcast. So there were, I think there were 8. And I did all 8.
Girl, I'll tell you something. Why? I just saw Breathe 3 years here in this network. I just saw it last week. The reason why I'm here is someone went out of town. And I never hosted my entire life. I said, James, can you come on and guest host this show? And I never did my time. But like you just said yes.
Take your opportunities.
So, hello.
Take them.
That's what I say. Say yes.
And you know what? I think what also became really symbiotic is the girl who was doing the woman who was doing the announcing. She ended up really, she has a whole like catching empire.
Oh,
she's
wow.
just amazing softball businesswoman. Yes. So I think for her, it probably worked out fine that she was sick. I don't think that it skipped a beat. Me, it allowed me to kind of have this new step into something I didn't even really realize. I knew I wanted to do it, but I hadn't had the opportunity, and I just jumped.
What is the – okay, I always think it's very – because I watch football, stuff like that. It just seems so hard to me because you're live. I mean, I do live television, but, I mean, you're live – catching every play, talking about it, giving your opinion part way, and how do you do it?
Well, first of all, my partner who does the play by play, he is amazing.
Okay,
he does stuff for the Angels, he's amazing.
Okay, we'll give him a shout out.
Yeah, Trent Shlom, you're amazing.
Yes.
Trent Rush, yes. He's on it. So he's really good, and so he allows me to really work through my learning curve.
Okay,
and. You know, I think initially the producers were like, Aaron, we know you know what you're talking about. Just go. But to have the confidence to say what you think.
Yes.
It's all about the confidence. So I think that each game that I was hosting in the beginning, mm-hmm. I think I got a little bit better each time and just more confident in saying what was going on.
Yeah.
Because at first, there were still girls I knew who were in the conference. So for me to say, I think that they could have made that play.
Sandra didn't really do a good job. This girl was like, hey, girl, let's we'll have drinks later. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So I think the older I get, the easier it is because I'm a little bit further removed. And I can kind of just watch the game for what it is.
Yes.
But also, when I was a player, I would just sit when I wasn't my turn pitching and I would sit. I would actually be commentating from the dugout. So I was kind of annoying. I'd be like, oh, this girl should be bunting right now. And my teammates were like, Aaron, they're not on our team. We don't care that they're not bunting right now. I'm like, well, they should have done this. Like, you know.
First of all, I just have to say, your energy is so infectious.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. I can see why people will be motivated by you. I totally get it.
Thank you.
Like, I want to play softball all of a sudden. And I've never had interest to play softball my entire life.
We'll make a league. The Black Hollywood Live Softball League.
Can you imagine? Oh my God. I'm a little older, too. I haven't done any of that stuff in a long time. but your enthusiasm makes you want to play. Like, oh my God, let's do something. Bye, it's the end of the show. We'll see you later.
We're going to go play softball now.
But also, I want to ask you, in college, what did you study in college?
I was a communication studies.
That makes sense. Okay.
So in that, you know, at first I thought I was going to be a dentist because I love to make people smile. So I wanted to be an orthodontist so that everyone could have nice, happy smiles. But then I realized that when you can communicate, you can make people smile that way as well. And
very true.
Yeah, and less science. So, it was really a great kind of way for me to have a diverse interest as I do. And now that I've gotten out of school a little bit more, I think that I actually use a lot what I've learned. People always talk bad about the liberal arts of communications, whatever. I'm like, look, when I'm talking to people, I know exactly how to read their body language.
You do. Yes,
I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, so.
It does come in handy.
It comes in handy.
It does come in handy. I want to say, and she's a SoCal native. That's what we do good stuff.
Yes.
Not everybody's a transplant. Some of us are from here.
Yes. Inland Empire, IE. Woo-woo.
Were you the 909 or were you the 9551?
I'm 909.
909. So okay, yes. My sister and they're from Rancho Cucamonga in Ontario.
That's me.
Yes.
Rancho.
She went to Etiwanda High School?
Yes. That's my rivals, though.
That's your rivals?
I went to Los Osos.
Okay. I know the area out there.
Go Grizzlies.
Okay, so now this initiative, this Club 42. Like, okay, so of course the number, but I'm gonna let you kind of explain initially what this thing is about.
Okay, so Club 42 is a nonprofit. We are 3 years old now.
Congratulations. We're going,
yeah, thank you. And initially, I got approached in the summer of 2014. I'd only been out of college for 1 month.
Wow.
And one of my business partners, this guy, Johnny Buck Lockwood, he comes up to me and says, I have this idea of where we want to mix kids from affluent areas and non-affluent areas, and we want them to just do baseball. And I was like, well, that sounds like kind of a cool idea. Okay, what are we doing? Like, I want to hear more. And initially, we had kind of like a training academy through the sport of baseball, obviously 42, Jackie Robinson.
Yes.
And what I soon learned after speaking to Johnny Buck Lockwood and his partner, Melissa Bowden, was that there was our angel, John Branca. His uncle played with Jackie Robinson.
Oh, wow.
And Ralph Branca, who, I don't know if you know the shot Heard Around the World. He pitched that Around the World.
Yeah.
And he was actually Jackie's pallbearer in his funeral.
Oh, wow.
And so they were very close friends, and he recently passed.
Okay.
And for the kind of the concept of that friendship standing for all of the kids from different communities playing together, that's really what we've built this whole community on. So obviously we are a little bit more than baseball now. We actually help blend kids from different communities for sports, music, and dance.
Perfect.
We do kids events through Boys and Girls Clubs.
Okay. Good.
And we help provide tuition support for kids that are in our program.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so there aren't the thing that's been so great about 42 is really seeing these kids who wouldn't know each other otherwise, playing sports together. So we have kids from like the Palisades and kids that are in Inglewood and all over.
Okay.
And we have a sports field that we were renovating in Inglewood at Rogers Park.
I live in Inglewood, so I know Rogers Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so at first there was no grass in the infield. There was no bases.
Yeah.
So we kind of helped revive that field and kind of bring that to be like a centerpiece while also, you know, being able to help these kids have more placement in middle school.
Okay.
So we primarily focus on 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Middle school kids, like that is our main focus.
Okay.
And we help support that, like kind of the 8th grade area as they transition into high school. Because what we found is a lot of these groups are helping itty bitty kids and they help high schoolers.
Yes.
And there's this kind of segment that needs additional help and support because as you place yourself as a 7th and 8th grader, you're giving yourself a better opportunity for high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so what really just kind of started with, okay, we're meeting every once in a while. I was volunteering and I soon learned that what I learned from softball could really help the program. Mm-hmm. And so at first, I was just a baseball coach.
Okay.
And I was coaching boys, which was a very interesting experience.
Very different. They're not women, not girls. They're
not girls. And I had coaching experience, but to coach baseball and to have these parents really question what I know, which for me was really difficult because
I'm sure.
I'm like, I was a D1 athlete. You know, I played professionally after college. I know what I'm
talking
about. Yeah.
Hello.
But for them to get over the fact that it was a woman.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that was difficult. But definitely as I became older, I was able to kind of get more respect for what I knew. And the kids would get in the car and tell their parents, like, we like Coach Aaron. And then the parents would come up to me and say, you know, my son really likes you. Mm-hmm. Or whatever you're telling the kids, they really like you in the dugout or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that would make me feel really good.
Yeah,
and over time, it's kind of been kind of coaching parents in a way as well. Because really, what I experienced as an athlete, not a lot of people experience. I think what the stat is like less 1% of players play D1 sports.
Wow.
And so to have these parents who would really hope that their kids play D1 sports, I realized that was something that was really valuable, and I was really lucky to be partnered with, you know, Johnny Lockwood and Melissa Bowden and John Branca and have them really support me and stand by me even when things were getting questioned of how much can this young girl know.
Yeah.
I'm 23 when I started being involved.
Right.
And that soon, being a baseball coach, turned into, okay, she's our program director. Okay, now she's the executive director. And so that's been a really fun journey, but also I've been able to really stand next to these parents, and especially for our first team.
Yeah.
I've known these kids since they were 11, some of them 10, now they're 14.
Right.
They're teenagers, they're big boys.
Right.
And to see them grow and I'm growing with them in a way. I think by the time they graduate high school will be when I'm 30.
Yeah.
So we're all kind of going together. Yeah. And that's been, it's really special. I love these kids.
So right now, has it been mostly boys? Have any girls?
Mostly boys, but we also have dance. And so we're mostly donor directed. So yes. When people want to assist in our dance program, then we can kind of bring our dancers all together. But the kids that we've had that have been in our dance program are amazing. Like,
okay.
Truly amazing. I'm going to give a shout out. Some of our dancers actually were part of the new revived version of the Mickey Mouse Club.
Oh.
So they're on Club Mickey Mouse. And
okay.
Yeah, they're dancing at top studios. They are really, really, really talented kids. We actually had a time where we took the whole Club 42 community up to go see the MJ1 show in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And the kids performed outside of the theater, MJ1 theater. And they're, you know, doing all these Michael Jackson moves just really, really talented kids. Yeah. I'm so proud.
Yeah.
So proud to know them. And to really see them grow as well has been really special. So we have been able to help girls in the dance community. For me personally, I'm really excited to kind of see in this next year growing some sort of girls sports program.
Yes, that's whole
yeah, that that would be definitely a goal. And I don't know if that's softball or if it's volleyball or I don't know where it is. It really would just depend on who would say, hey, we love the idea of blending these girls from these different communities. And this is the sport that we think will work best. We've also had people say soccer to us as well.
Probably.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's yet to be determined. But that's for this year. So I'm excited. Yeah. Stay tuned.
it's great because I always believe that, we are a village, especially as black folks, we come from, and you watch Black Panther and stuff, we come from tribes and villages, and the village helps each other.
Definitely.
And I think it's great that you're going back in, you guys are going back in, and you're helping the village.
Yes, and you know what's, the most special part of it is we had a time where one of the kids from the Palisades is sitting on the bench next to one of our, black kids, and I don't even know what city he's from, but he's from more of the LA area, like West LA. And they're sitting together and he's like, oh, I need a pick. And the kid goes, what's a pick? So we had a whole conversation about what a pick is.
Yeah,
and someone else saying, I wish my hair was like Odell Beckham Jr. This nice bleached blonde, kid is like, I want Odell Beckham Jr.'s hair. And I'm sitting on the bench. I'm like, this is why we're doing this, right? Because these conversations that you're not even going to know these kids. And not saying LA's really diverse, but it's different when you're teammates and it's different when there's a comfort level. And I think that that's been a really special part of it.
I think sports is a great equalizer in that way anyway, because then because you're on a team, the color kind of goes away. But I like also that after and before there is conversations happening, because what happens, a lot of people who see just themselves, whether it's black or white or Asian or whatever, you're used to just that.
Yes.
So conversations would never come up. Things would never even come to you because you have no reason to confront it or even think about it.
Right. And I think that that's kind of the downfall of being in a more homogenous society.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, LA, we're really fortunate that there's a lot of diversity.
Yes, we're lucky.
We're very lucky. But I think also in that diversity, being able to be really comfortable having conversations and going to each other's houses. Because I think it's in public spaces, everyone's diverse.
Oh, but yes.
Going to someone's house and eating pizza together and driving them to the game. And, as the parents, being able to communicate with one another as well. And it's not just black kids and white kids. We have Latino kids as well. And one of our kids, he's such a special individual, is, been working with his parents who don't even speak English. And, And he's the main, he's so responsible. He does all of his emails. He's 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
And is on email. This is what we're doing.
I'm
like,
hire him.
Right. So special.
Hello.
Special kids. Yeah. So I think that that's been really great. And then also I love that we've recently had more partnerships with the Boys and Girls Club. We had an event with over 300 kids this past Halloween, which we called Thrilloween. And we turned the whole Boys and Girls Club into a multi-screen theater.
Oh, cool.
We had four screens going, and we're showing the Michael Jackson Halloween special. They had a red carpet for the kids.
Of course.
They performed. It was amazing. Amazing, amazing. So that's when we're able to really have more reach with our program, and it's not so individualized, but more so of saying, okay, how can we help a great amount of kids do something really fun and special that they'll remember forever? And recently, I just saw the folks at the Santa Monica Boys and Girls Club, and they told me the kids are still talking about it. They're still talking about that event.
See?
It was so fun.
See? Now, my question is for you and for the folks out there who are tuning in and watching this. What can people do if they want to help? Because you're a nonprofit.
Yes.
It's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit.
Nonprofit. They need people to believe in them with dollars.
Amen.
And cents. So what can people do if they want to get involved?
You know, I think at this point right now, it would be great to have people who were wanting... We need people that are going to really help us grow the idea of the nonprofit. Okay. So someone who, like, believes in what you're saying and what we're about blending kids from different communities, mm-hmm. and saying, you know what? I have a dance studio and I would love to host dancers.
Okay.
I'm a choreographer and I want to donate my time to teach kids. And, like... You know what I've really found, which is so interesting, is the donating of time. I get it, time is money, but like donating time is so crucial. It's almost more than the dollars because kids are, they're not everywhere, but you can find kids that need assistance. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to find a kid that needs some help.
Nope.
It's hard to find a grown-up that wants to help those kids without being like, and what are we doing?
Right.
How long? Yes, and not looking at their clock.
Right, or their phone.
Yeah, but being present because mm-hmm. kids... Especially kids that have two working parents, as most kids do, or one working parent, they need adults who are going to be present. So,
well, I'm telling you right now, on camera, I'm saying this to you. If you ever want somebody to come and speak, I'm a certified life coach. You want to speak about media or being an author, because I have books, I publish books and things, I will come and speak.
That would be amazing.
I'll donate my time.
I'll
put my money in my mouth. I'm putting my time in my mouth.
We need it.
So, we'll work something out. If you ever want, I will come and speak to kids.
I love that. I'm going to hold you to it. We'll take pictures and send it to everyone.
Yes, exactly. But I'm serious. I'd love to. I think there might be some kids who might want to go into TV or go into radio or some that write. I mean, I want to can I do spoken word stuff.
I know we do. Yeah. I know we do. Okay. I will take you up on that.
Okay.
That's amazing.
So
thank
folks
you.
Should follow suit. So folks should follow suit. I'm leading the charge.
Sports coaches,
yes.
Media training, that's mm-hmm. also great. Mm-hmm. You know, even I think I dance, like we talked about, helping grow a girls program.
Come on, let's do it.
Yeah, like, let's help get some girl power going
on. The time is now, anyway.
Yeah, the time is now.
The time is now.
That's, I would love to get some girls doing something.
Girl stuff. Come on, folks, do it. And if you want, you need to contact me, I'll connect you with her. But where can they actually find you if they want to talk about this Club 42 stuff?
So our website is go42.org. Super easy.
Yes.
You also could... I'll just put my Go42 email out there because it's simple. It's e@go42.org.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now, I ask my guests the same two questions. I've done it 103 times before. And I never prepped them. As you guys at home watch the show, no, I never prepped them. So I believe in language and your communications, language, all that stuff. So my first question to you, what word or phrase should we not say anymore?
You know what word or phrase we shouldn't say anymore?
Tell me.
Is can't.
It's a great one. It's a classic. It's a classic.
I don't believe in can't and shouldn't. And then all of those of things that like say that we are limited. Yeah, yeah, don't limit yourself.
Okay, that's a good phrase. Okay, so now on the other side of that, what word or phrase should we say more of?
We should say more of I will.
Like that.
I'm trying. I will do
blank.
X.
Yes.
Yeah. Try is great. It's great to try to do things, but it's also great to say that you will do it.
Right.
Speak it into existence. You will.
Also, it forces you to have self-commitment.
Totally.
When you say will.
Exactly.
When you say try, you can back out. Well, I said I'd try, but when you say I will, you're telling yourself, I'm going to do this.
And it also is saying you're not afraid if it can't happen. Circumstances happen sometimes where we can't achieve the things that we want to achieve. But I think it's really powerful for our mind to say, like, I will achieve X. And if circumstances don't allow that to happen, I can pivot.
Yeah.
Trying is, you don't have to be accountable.
No, not to be accountable. And I don't like that.
You don't have to be accountable.
Mm-hmm. Coach Aaron, you're the best.
You're so sweet.
You are just like, it's amazing. And I wish I was 13 years old and I could play on one of your teams.
You're so sweet.
And then like go out there and do stuff. It's okay. I didn't have that when I was 13 years old. So I didn't have a coach like you out there who's doing that. I think it's amazing.
I'm so obsessed with the kids that are. I mean, we have three part of our baseball program, and the program that I've known the kids since they were 11.
Yeah.
I'm all of their parents, those kids, they are just so special to me. I just can't wait to see what they all become. Because I know they're all going to be someone really special.
Well, it just makes me happy as an older person to see that young people today do care about their community.
Kids are everything. They are who I'm going to have to deal with them too. They're going to be adults one day. Everyone becomes an adult.
That's very
we want to have great adults, right?
No, we do. We have seriously,
people.
We
need to have good people.
We do.
And it takes the people to go back. You have to go back. Mm-hmm. You can't just like turn around.
Nope. Yeah. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. Yeah. I do. Thank you so much for being on the
show. Thank you for having me. This is wonderful. Thank you.
And so, again, so tell me where they can find you on social media if they want to.
So, you can find me on social media on Twitter, ErinJW42. It's ErinJW42. That's the same as my Instagram. And for Club 42 info, just go to go42.org.
And, of course, Breaking Into is on the Facebook page. You can go there and like us and follow us. And more information about her and Club 42 will be on that page. So I'll make sure that everything is like a click away. I make it very easy for you to click. And you'll be able to go to see what she's talking about. Also, all our episodes. Our episodes are there. I post them there. They're also on iTunes for audio. And they're on YouTube under Black Hollywood Live, of course. Thanks to Black Hollywood Live for having us here every week, of course. I'm James Lott Jr. You can follow me where all James Lott Jr.'s are, at James Lott Jr. on all social media platforms. And I'll see you next time.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.